Ms. Hoft.
May it please the court, good morning, judges. Janine Hoff and Amber Miller at council table on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, Jane Doe. A police officer...
That obviously is not her name.
No, it's not.
What's the justification for confidentiality in this case?
Your Honor, this case, when it was initially filed, was filed as a Jane Doe.
What's the justification?
This was an... I think what the issue in the case, why she's Jane Doe, is the very nature of this authority and the embarrassment and the difficulty it was for her to come forward.
We actually have quite a lot of cases under Title VII, for example, that deal with sexual harassment by supervisors where all the litigants are named. I can't see any reason here for allowing anonymous litigation, and we've been fairly clear in recent years that anonymous litigation is for extraordinary cases only. I can't see any reason why your client would not be named when hundreds or thousands of similarly situated people in Title VII cases are named.
Your Honor, if the court and if the court below had ordered that, we would consider amending the complaint and naming our client after discussion with her. I came into this case after the original complaint was filed as a Jane Doe, and there was no objection to that at any point. Mm-hmm. A police officer detained, assaulted, and harassed a civilian. These abuses of power were committed by the defendant, police officer Charles White, and those abuses of power
seems
were made.
At a minimum, the defendant should also be anonymous.
I understand your point, Your Honor, and
you're accusing the defendant of pretty obnoxious conduct.
There was never any request by the defendant to be anonymous either in this case. But these abuses of power that the defendant committed were made possible by the awesome and unique authority invested in him by his employer, the Department of Police of the City of Chicago.
I want to ask you a quick sort of bottom line question, and it's this. If we were to decide that there is a narrow question of fact regarding whether Officer White was acting in the scope of his employment when he effectuated the traffic stop, is there still a question that would be left to be certified to the Illinois Supreme Court?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. The issue is that this is an interrelated course of conduct that included the traffic stop, that it can't be piecemealed out, but that the jury should hear all the evidence.
Yeah, your argument really isn't, I don't think your argument really is about scope of employment. He wasn't acting in the scope of employment. What he was doing, which concerns you, I think, validly, is that he is sort of given by the city extraordinary powers, and so there's an argument that the city should have, you know, non-delegable responsibility for those powers. But wouldn't that have to be decided by the Illinois Supreme Court?
Well, Your Honor, I believe as you pointed out in the Jansen case, now that was a Title VII case, but you did a survey of Illinois law. And it is true that the general rule may be that in sexual misconduct cases, generally you consider that outside the scope of employment. But the one exception to that that's already in the law of Illinois is the St. Paul versus Downs case in the context of psychotherapists, which, as you pointed out in Jansen, is similar to the type of authority and the unique and awesome authority that we place in the hands of police officers. And that's why the Illinois law...
I think that's different in the same way that Waymire is different. One thing, if you provide people with a kind of... if you give them what amounts to custodial responsibility. That's one thing. If he had, you know, arrested her or something like that, put her in the squad car. But he didn't do that, right? He never took control over her. He abused his authority, but not to the point of you know, actually exercising.
Did I interrupt you?
He didn't take her into custody. He didn't take control over her.
Well, the issue is in the definition of what an arrest is. She did not feel free to leave. She felt detained. She felt intimidated by that, again, power and authority that he had over her. And that happened at the initial encounter when she requested
to leave. That's true, but using powers that your employer has given you is not the same thing as acting within the scope of your employment.
Well, that's true, but what we're saying in this case is that the use of his power is his scope of employment. But when he abuses that power in an
intimidating... But what if he robbed the bank?
Right? I'm sorry?
So we had a case recently. It wasn't a bank. We had a case recently of police officers who actually committed a burglary, and they were armed. So if a police officer used his, you know, police gun to rob a bank, you wouldn't say that was within the scope of employment, would you?
No, you would not. And the difference is, with regard to the nature of sexual harassment, the nature of providing a police force to maintain law and order, giving them then the authority to deal with the public, none of this would have happened if Defendant White was not a police officer.
But you haven't explained the difference between this. And robbing a bank is one possibility. Something we've seen in a number of criminal prosecutions is the police officer enters a home on, let's say, lawful police business and then steals some of the contents. There's one famous case we had where he drank a can of soda and was accused of stealing that content. But let's assume he steals a valuable antique, just puts it in his pocket and walks out. Is he acting within the scope of his employment? He never would have been inside the home had he not been a police officer. That's what gave him the opportunity to pocket the antique. Is he acting within the scope of his employment when he steals from the person he's supposed to be, whose rights he's supposed to be protecting?
And the purpose for him going into the house in your hypothetical?
Suppose there's been a burglary at the house. A burglar has come in, taken A, B, and C. The police come to investigate. They're lawfully admitted to the house. And the police officer steals item B. Right? Is he acting within the scope of his employment?
I think
as
in that
a thief.
I think in that hypothetical he may very well be. If you look at all of the factors from the restatement.
Are there any state cases in Illinois that would support that? I mean, there are lots of people who, by virtue of their employment, get access to people's homes, not just police. The Postal Service guy may come, or right, the FedEx guy may come and get access to your home, and it's unfortunately the case that there have been FedEx guys who have raped their clients. It's the FedEx guy who rapes his client, acting within the scope of his employment.
Your Honor, in your hypothetical, you're talking about a FedEx person. We would say that's distinguishable from a police officer. And a rape,
I'm dealing with the set of cases where, by virtue of office or by virtue of job, a person gets access to a stranger or a stranger's house and then abuses that position, uses that for an unlawful or immoral purpose. Now, there are some cases. There have been, I think, state cases involving the UPS guy who raped somebody. The Supreme Court said that's not within the scope of employment. Not the Supreme Court of Illinois, it turns out. There must be such cases in Illinois. That's what I'm looking for. What does Illinois have to say about this set of cases?
Well, I think the general rule in Illinois is that the totality of the circumstances should be submitted to the jury for determination, and that you look at all of the factors.
Are there such cases in Illinois where somebody, by virtue of his job, gets in a position to commit a wrong against a third party?
Well, I think
what do the state courts of Illinois say about whether that wrong is within the scope of the employment, and thus you get one or another form of vicarious liability, right? This is just a question about what the state courts have said. What have they said?
Well, I think that the state court case that I can think of that may be closest to what you're talking about is the Stern case, where there was a sexual assault in a hotel by a massage therapist, and that was found to be outside the scope of employment. However, what we're saying is distinguishable in terms of the very nature of the employment here and the awesome authority invested by the employer in the employee to maintain law and order, and in that case, it was the employer's business to...
So it sounds like your view is you answer the George Posner's bank robbery hypothetical and my theft hypothetical by saying that the bank robbery and the theft are within the scope of employment.
They may very well be under Illinois.
But are there any such Illinois cases? What's the best Illinois case you would cite for that proposition, most favorable to you?
The most favorable to me would be the St. Paul versus Downs case, where the psychotherapist engaged in sexual relations with a client. That was in the course of, he was able to get the authority to mismanage the transference, counter-transference phenomenon by the very fact of his employment and his counseling of the individual. The Illinois appellate court case in that case of St. Paul said that was within the scope of employment, and that is what we have here. We have the awesome authority of the police department being utilized, and some of the behavior. The issue in the case is that it includes a course of conduct that was perpetrated by Defendant White over a 3-month period.
Okay, thank you. Your time has expired. Ms. Hoff, Ms. Knott?
May it please the Court. The campaign of sexual harassment alleged in this case without question included an abuse of authority by Officer White.
Why not certify it to the Illinois Supreme Court of Illinois, because you have this St. Paul case, and you have cases in other jurisdictions, and there are arguments, not really scope of employment, but there's an argument that because police are made so powerful by their employer, the employer ought to be responsible. Like, you know, there's this notion that if you hire an independent contractor to do hazardous work for you, you nevertheless retain liability for any injuries that people encounter from that work. So there is this notion of non-delegable duties of care in unusually hazardous circumstances. Why isn't there enough to make this a worthwhile issue for Supreme Court of Illinois to consider? You know, maybe they want to expand their existing principles a bit.
In our brief, we do agree with plaintiff's request for certification, the reason being that the Illinois Supreme Court has never addressed the issue whether sexual misconduct by persons of significant power and authority is within the scope of employment. The Illinois appellate courts have addressed this issue in cases involving a truant officer's sexual abuse of a 16-year-old student, a daycare provider's abuse of a young child, a deputy sheriff's rape of a jogger. But we recognize that these Illinois appellate court cases may diverge somewhat from decisions of this court, and to the extent there is a divergence between things this court has said and what the Illinois appellate court has said, the case does warrant certification. But if I may, I was going to begin simply with a brief discussion of the Illinois cases, and as I have said, the Illinois Supreme Court has not reached this precise issue.
I guess, I'm a little surprised by what you said about supporting certification, because in your conclusion of your brief, you say, "We respectfully request this court affirm the judgment of the district court. Any alternative, we request that this court certify the scope of employment."
Our view is that
if you'd prefer us to affirm and forget it rather than hold on to it and certify an issue.
Well, of course we would prefer that you affirm. however, we believe that, if you follow the Illinois appellate court cases carefully, and those cases do follow the standards set forth in Wright versus the City of Danville, which is...
Well, let me ask you a question about indemnification. if Wright were held to... Well, it's state indemnification, isn't it, rather than city?
Yes, it's state law.
So what is the Illinois rule on indemnification?
That the city would have to indemnify for any misconduct that was found to be within the scope. So the scope of employment issue dictates...
Even if it's deliberate?
Yes. The issue is the same on both of those claims. If Officer White's conduct is within the scope, the city has to indemnify, and she prevails under respondeat superior. However, we believe that this conduct is not within the scope under Illinois law, because Illinois law requires intent to serve the employer. And the Illinois appellate courts have made quite clear that sexual misconduct is outside the scope, because sexual misconduct is uniquely personal.
You should have an absolute duty to indemnify an intentional wrongdoer. Seems odd.
Is there any scenario where a police department could be held vicariously liable for the sexual misconduct of a police officer?
Sure. For example, if a police officer, raped a suspect to extract a confession. If there were a law enforcement purpose, the city would be vicariously liable under the standards set forth in Illinois law. However, in this situation, there's simply no evidence of any law enforcement purpose on Officer White's part.
Well, he said there was a traffic violation, didn't he?
No.
Oh, so you're talking specifically about the traffic stop?
No.
Well, she, of course, testified in her deposition that he did not say that.
I know.
What she said is that she asked him if she'd done anything wrong, and he said, no, you did nothing wrong. And so for her to rely on his testimony, she has to basically repudiate everything she said in her deposition, and she's not allowed to do that under the case of the site.
It is pretty ironic that, the facts which favor Ms. Doe are those that were set forth by Officer White, but on summary judgment, a court has to take the facts in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, doesn't it?
Of course, that's the general rule, but the exception to that rule is that a party cannot repudiate prior sworn testimony in order to stave off summary judgment, and that's what Ms. Doe is trying to do in this case. But even if we allow her to rely on Officer White's testimony, that he observed her make a traffic stop, Illinois law follows a standard that says that conduct that's too little actuated by an intent to serve the employer is outside the scope. And this means that the fact that there may be a scintilla of evidence that Officer White had a law enforcement purpose isn't enough in the whole, in the context of this case, where the evidence is overwhelmingly to the contrary. The evidence shows that he pulled her over after spending weeks telephoning her, trying to make a date with him. When he did pull her over, he didn't give her a ticket. He told her he wanted to get her address so he could find out where she lived and come to her house, which he did. And then he tried to enter into a sexual relationship with her.
Has there ever been a criminal prosecution of Officer White? In other words, did the police call the matter of the illegal trespass and entry to the attention of the state's attorney?
The case was not prosecuted criminally, and I don't know from this record why that was the case. But of course, Officer White was brought up on charges before the police board, and a significant number of those charges were sustained. Not all of them were, because there was a lot of controversy in the record about what happened between the two of them. But on those charges that were sustained, he was suspended for nearly a year. So the police department took this very seriously.
But he's back.
Yes. It was a year-long suspension, and as far as I know, he is on the force.
That's reassuring.
But you have to consider that the record before the police board at the hearing is very different from the record in this case. As Judge Rovner pointed out, you know, this court is obligated to view all the facts in Doe's favor. The police board did not have that obligation. The superintendent had the burden of the proof, a burden of proof. The superintendent put on his case, but Officer White vehemently denied that the interaction between himself and Doe was anything other than consensual. And then when there was corroboration for Doe's story, the charges were sustained against him. In other cases, there was not corroboration, and apparently the board disbelieved her. The superintendent had the burden of proof. It's not surprising that not all the charges were sustained. So we, of course, rely on Illinois decisions, which, as I have said, I believe make quite clear that sexual misconduct is generally outside the scope of employment.
What was special about the St. Paul case?
Well, the St. Paul case, of course, involved a psychotherapist, and the decision there was only dicta. The Stern Court later recognized that and said it wasn't controlling. But also in St. Paul, there was a finding by the court that the sex may have been prescribed as a part of therapy. So there could have been a job-related purpose. And, of course, Illinois recognizes that if there's a dual purpose, right, job-related and personal, it's within the scope. Here, there simply was no law enforcement purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Doe relies on decisions of this court, such as West versus Waymire, which discussed Indiana law, and as well as cases from other states to argue in favor of an abuse of authority standard. These cases are not controlling because they do not apply Illinois law. But as I have said, because the Illinois Supreme Court has not addressed this issue, and because this circuit's approach seems to diverge from the approach taken by the Illinois appellate courts, we believe that the question whether abuse of authority is sufficient to bring police officer misconduct within the scope of employment should be certified to the Illinois Supreme Court. For this reason, we request certification, or we request that the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Knotts, and thank you to Ms. Hoft. So, move on to our next case, which is Suarez versus Menard.